live on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. A new day brings new topics. Our sports talk brings extensive debate and analysis by the host, expert contributors, and callers. We discuss it all. Join us weekdays at 6 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio.
Hey, welcome to Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. Tonight is happening in sports here at 6 p.m. and at 7 p.m. We will button up March Madness and talk men's basketball. A shout out to all the ladies and men last night who discussed women's basketball, the national championship game, and we did a mock draft for the WNBA. Thank you to everyone that participated. Duck Riley, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Princess. We got our boy traveling, man. Hey, look.
He gets around, Duck. He gets around for sure. Tim is moving on up or whatever they say. For sure.
Hey, look,
but
look, we don't want him doing like Ricky Porter. All right, Tim, don't hit no truck stop.
Duck Riley. Let me go ahead and get the guest in here for sure. Coach Bowden, how are you?
Doing good. I appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you being on. I'm looking forward to it. Awesome. 1341, I'm just going to call up the last four of your number. I don't know this one. 1341, how are you? Who do we have?
All right, this is Lyndon Johnson.
Hey, how are you, Coach? President?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing really good. Thank you for being on. 6388. Give us your name. Hi, Coach
Brian
Baker. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Brian?
Doing good. Duck, that's what we have right now. Go ahead and get started.
Okay. All right, here we go. All right. Baker, I'm going to start off with you, Baker. I want to talk about, as a coach, what are you looking for during spring practice?
Well, it's different because of your different guys. You know, now that you get freshmen coming in early and it's their first spring, obviously you're looking to develop them, try to find out what their strengths are and enhance those and then obviously pick up on their weaknesses. And, because you really don't know. I mean, you're evaluating from high school and then they come in and their first time in college and, you know, they got their emotions going and all those kind of things. So their development is a little different than the guys that you've had, right? Whether they have been guys going into their senior years or whether they were, you know, freshmen who were redshirted going into their first year of collegiate football. You have a feel of as a coach, you have a feel about what those guys, what's going to give those guys their best opportunity to be productive on the field. Right, and you would probably have already talked to them about the things that you want them to improve on, you know, during that developmental period, off season, leading up to spring ball. So it really depends on, you know, again, where they are in the classification. But overall, Duck, it's all about those guys doing everything they can do, right, to get better at their craft, to become better football players.
Okay, Coach Johnson.
Yeah, I agree with Coach there. You know, I've always looked at spring as two things. One, it's about developing those young guys and getting a better feel for them and identifying some of your weaknesses as you go into the summer workouts and understand what you need to work on. The other part of it that I always looked at as well from a coach standpoint is by the time spring ball comes around, you know, you've had a chance to go through some, if not all, of your cut-ups from the fall season and then look at the things you did well schematically and the things you did not so well. So the spring sometimes is a chance to take a look at some things from a schematic standpoint, and if you want to try new things and experiment a little bit, that's kind of the time to do that. And then as you get into preseason camp, you kind of, you know, you're locked into what you want to do and how you want to get the guys prepared and use your 30 practices to get ready for game one.
Okay. Coach Bowden.
You know, trying to think of some things, you know, both all the things mentioned are on the head coach's checklist of things they want to accomplish. And trying to think of some different things. And one of them would be something I didn't have to face when I was a head coach, was a transfer portal, and you got those new guys in, and how soon are you going to work them in without really disrupting the unity and the harmony of the team that you already have in place? Another thing, David, you have to look at is position changes. A defensive back that can play wide receiver, a running back that can play linebacker, a tight end that might play possibly defensive end. You can't afford to do that in the preseason and in the fall. So position changes sometimes are something that you look at, even if you're not sure that they can play it or not. Spring is a good time to find that out. The other thing that I think you really try to develop, and somebody earlier touched on a little bit, but you really start in off season and then you go to spring ball. But every time you turn over a team, you lose leadership. You lose your leaders. And the team chemistry, the team personality, all that changes. So you look at who the leaders are, and you try to put your team in challenging positions, and you can develop this. I used to tell them the team on spring, I'd pick one Saturday. I said, listen, we're going to do a 15-play drive. There are no substitutions. I want to challenge your heart. I want to challenge your intensity, challenge your effort, challenge your hustle, challenge your enthusiasm when fatigue has set in. So these are some things that you can afford to do during the spring that you really can't do during the fall.
Okay. Let me stay right with you. If you have an All-American on your squad, does he go through spring ball?
For me?
Yeah.
It's really challenging. You walk a fine line. I had a defensive end at Clemson that was the fourth pick overall in the first round. He was a great pass rusher. And, man, I did not want him to get. So I had to sit him a lot in spring ball as far as the scrimmages and certain drills that were high-risk drills. Another guy I had named C.J. Spiller, a great tailback, that I think he was the 10th overall pick in the first round. And you can you have to really be careful, because there's a lot of guys that think they're as good and they're not sitting out. So, yes, I would definitely hold some difference makers, All-Americans, whatever you want to call them. I would definitely hold them out in the spring. But I think you have to explain it to your team. If you've got a senior leadership council, or you have to sit down and tell them what you're going to do, and make sure your team aware of what you're doing, or I think you can really create some disunity on your team. But I would definitely hold a difference maker out.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, Doug, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Babe. You were next.
Okay, yeah, because I was fortunate in 2018, to have two first-team All-SEC, two All-Americans, two first-round picks, you know, with the defensive front. And that question kind of came up, you know, what do we want to do with these guys? They both had played a lot of football. One was a junior. The other guy was a senior. And we knew they were going to be the guys, right, because they were all first-team All-SEC the year before. So we knew they were going to be the guys. And really, we based it off of them, you know, kind of, okay, are they workers? In their case, those guys' case, they both were. So they wanted to work. They were leaders on the defense, so they wanted to be out there with the guys. So what we did is we went on and they practiced, and, you know, we give them a little taste of a scrimmage. So we didn't work them as hard. And unfortunately, we had a bunch of guys behind them that needed to be developed too. So those reps, you know, working with the first defense and those things. And the defensive line position is unique in that you rotate those guys a lot anyway, or at least we did. So, you know, you were trying to develop guys behind those guys anyway. So it kind of worked out. But as far as the work that they got every day, I mean, unless they were tweaked or anything, and really kind of the same thing in the summer. You know, we gave them as much as we felt like they needed. You know, we talked to them, you know, quite a bit about it, going through it. And really, even you know, the bowl game, you know, the times when guys, and we weren't playing for national championship. We're pretty good defense, but we weren't playing national championship. But, you know, they both wanted to play in the bowl game, and they wanted their reps. I mean, I was about to, you know, kind of milk it down. They got after my tail. Coach, man, we don't play. You know what I mean? So I think it depends on, you know, I think it depends on the health of the guy, the kind of guy it is, what, you know, what kind of quality is he going to bring to practice? You know, is he going to is he going to lead by example, or is he just going to be, you know, out there, you know, slapping around and not setting a good example? I think all of that matters, because I agree with Coach Fallon. I mean, at the end of the day, you want to get those guys to those Saturday afternoon, you know, healthy and hunting for you.
Okay. Coach Johnson.
Yeah, I agree totally with Coach. I mean, I think it depends a lot on the type of player and their mentality. I know I've had it both ways. I've had an All-American where we tried to hit him in the spring, and he got really upset. I mean, he got – it was a bad scene for a little bit. I mean, he wanted his reps. He wanted to get the work in, and then we had another guy who was kind of the exact opposite. You know, he wanted some time to rest his body a little bit. But the biggest thing is, are they mature enough to handle it? And you got to just have that conversation with them and understand here are the goals that we want to get through. Because sometimes in spring, there's a lot that if you have the right guy that he can gain from a mentality standpoint and from leading those young guys, being in their ear, being a coach on the field, you know, being in the meeting rooms, really help those guys. So a lot of it just depends on the maturity of each player, I believe.
Okay. I don't know if Coach Healy, that you hear what we're talking about. But
I'm actually on Duck. How's everybody doing?
Okay. Okay. You want to touch up on that?
Well, I mean, it'll be pretty much saying the same thing that you know, all the other guys have said. It you know, it comes down to the maturity of the player. Then it comes down to the depth of your team, because you still want to get a chance to evaluate some of your younger guys that's trying to develop to come out of the spring. And if it allows you to, if you're deep enough where you have enough guys where you can still have a good practice and still get some good work, then, you know, you find a way to get those guys to the gate, you know, and you don't want to, you know, lose those guys in spring ball, but it's still important for those guys to polish and get better as well. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do is, you know, muscle memory, and when it comes to that, you know, you develop those skills in practice. So, but again, you got to be smart regardless of however you do it, because, you know, the games are won on Saturdays and there's not one, you know, in the spring. So in the same vein of what everybody else is saying, it would be saying the same thing over and over again.
Okay. I want to bring Tim in. I know Tim just got on. Tim, as a player, what were you trying to get out of spring ball?
I was trying to stay in good, solid condition, kind of train my mind for, you know, maintaining the kind of intensity I heard one of the coaches, maybe Coach Johnson, talking about, to keep that edge. And also, you want to, I think as a competitor, let the other guys that are out there trying to take your job know that I'm still the big dog here, you know. So I think as a player, that's kind of a part of your mentality at the very least.
Okay. Coach Johnson, after the spring game, is that an evaluation period? And do you have the exit interview with your players?
Definitely. That was something that I think is very important, because I know for me, when I was a player, I wanted to make sure I always had those conversations with the coaches, and so I knew exactly what the expectations were, where I stood. And then as a coach, once again, I want to make sure my guys going into the summer, they know exactly what's expected of them. You know, and as far as what we're looking for out of them from a leadership standpoint, from a development standpoint, all the things that they can control off the field, I want to make sure that they're on the same page with me and the staff and understand what the goals are. Well, I think those exit interviews are extremely important from both sides.
Okay. Coach Bowden.
You know, Dave, I thought it was very important. And it's really harder than you would think, because I know I had 85 scholarship players. You got at least 20 walk-ons. You want to do a thorough job. So you say 15 minutes per interview. That's four per hour. That's if you go 5 hours, that's only 20. It takes over a week. If you can get 5 hours a day as a head coach, sometimes you have speaking engagements and other events that you have to attend. So it's hard getting that. It usually takes a week and a half. But I thought it was critical, especially when you're a new head coach. At Tulane, when I first went there, I didn't recruit any of those guys. I didn't know the family, didn't know the parents, didn't know anything about them. And same thing when I went to Clemson. So I thought it was extremely important, especially new as a new head coach. But I did it every spring, and it's hard because in 5 hours now, you can't take – there's no going to the bathroom. You better eat your sandwich while you're talking. You know, it's a challenge, and you don't want to – you know, even the walk-ons. I've met with walk-ons because I was a walk-on, and I thought it was important that you bring those guys in and make them feel as much as part of the team as you could, even though they weren't getting, you know, any kind of scholarship money. So, yeah, I think it's critical that you get on the same page with every player. They have a chance to look eye to eye. And I tried to make it, listen, I'm not going to punish you for any question that you want to ask. Make sure when you leave this meeting, you leave with all your questions answered. There's nothing that you'd be afraid to ask me. So I tried to spell that out where they had some freedom and some courage to ask what they wanted. But I thought that was very important, the exit interviews in the spring.
Okay, Coach Baker, you know, were you strictly doing your defensive linemen? You know, I know Coach Bowden had to do everybody because he was the head coach. So how does right. it work as an assistant or defensive coordinator?
Yeah, as a coordinator, you know, very much what Coach was talking about as a head coach. You know, you as a coordinator, you want to speak to your entire defensive unit. And it's a little tougher depending on when spring ball's over and then when spring recruiting starts, okay, in terms of when you have to be out on the road. So you have to navigate all those things. As a position coach, your numbers, even though I was a D-line coach and we had probably the biggest room, you know, us and the O-line possibly, you know, but it was a little easier because you just don't have as many guys. You know, you're talking, you know, 20, 22 guys. But it was really, really important. And one of the things to Coach's point about creating a culture or an environment where guys feel comfortable talking to you, okay, and listening, right, and not nervous. And, you know, so where they it's an interactive conversation so they can gather as much information from you as they can so they can apply it and obviously get better going in a summer practice. One of the questions I would always ask them, too, that I think kind of loosened the mood a little bit, is, hey, is there something I can do to help you? You know, is there something I can do to help you understand what we're doing, something I can do to give you a better idea, to better understand, you know, why I want you to do that and why it's important for you to apply it, you know, and it always makes them pause a little bit. Obviously, to give some thought, because they ain't coming in there thinking, you know, what is Coach going to ask me that question unless they've been with me before. But creating that environment is really important because you don't have much time, and that meeting, as Coach Johnson was saying, is really, really important, and you want to be able to make it as productive as possible.
Okay. Tim, from a player's viewpoint, can you talk to us about did you guys have an exit interview from your head coach or from even from your position coach?
Primarily the position coach, and it was sort of the flip side of what the coaches have just been talking about, and that is wanting to, you know, I think every player, and Doug, you probably felt this way when you were playing as well. You are probably your own harshest critic, I mean, in terms of your performance. You know, you recap in your mind the things that you could have done better when you were playing. And a lot of times you're harder on yourself than people watching you are. And I think it's important in spring ball to understand, does the coach see the same thing I'm seeing? How is he evaluating my performance as opposed to what I'm seeing in myself? And I think those exit interviews the coach is talking about are really, really important in those conversations because that can help you know what he's seeing, and if there's something that he sees that you need to work on, that gives you some intel for the next few months to get ready for a preseason camp.
Okay. Coach Hill Ely, as from my head coaches, you hear what Coach Bowden said, you hear what Coach Bacon, Coach Johnson said. Your point of view on the exit interview.
Yeah, I always found the exit interview to be very important as a head coach. One, I wanted to always set up my exit interviews that we gave before spring ball. We set what the goals are for, you know, for each player. Each one of the coaches, assistant coaches, met with the player, and you know, these are the things that we want you to work on. These are the things that we want you to get better at. And every scrimmage, we would grade alignment, assignment, and execution. And we use the same grade scale that they had on the other side of campus, so that now as you tallied up the alignment, assignments, execution, that young man came out of camp with a 70 that was passing. Anything below that wasn't passing. And he could, you know, and it would, and we would use that same grade scale. And I started doing that because being at limited resource institutions and or 1AA at the time, you could remove scholarships, but you couldn't remove it for athletic ability because the young men could, you know, they would have appeals. But it was hard for them to appeal a process that graded them as the same way that they were graded on the other side of the campus. So, one, it gave them appreciation for understanding that we're no different than your biology and your English teacher. We have a course outline. We have goals that have to be met, and there's a criteria for where you are in the class and where you are in practice. So it was always important for me to 5-10 minutes and meet with every guy on the team, regardless of what his role was, to one, just mainly, you know, talk to them, see where they are and, in life, see where they are, you know, on the field, to see what's going on with the family. It was almost like an end-of-the-year wellness check to make sure that we had guys aligned for what was about to come up the next season. So, and I think when you do it that way, you're able to get more out of the guys because they know you're being fair. They know it's not, well, you need to get better, but so what's getting better? You're doing what's asked, but you're grading out 60, and this is what we need you to do. We can't win with 60, but we got a fighting chance with a 70, but we got guys grading out at 80%. That means that you're being able to transfer the information that the coaches are giving you, and you're not only taking the information, you're able to regurgitate that over to the field where you're able to execute and give us an opportunity to win each and every Saturday.
Okay. I want to bring you, and this is kind of part of the same question, how do you handle the player that cannot help you?
Well, with myself, they're all important. They all belong to somebody. Even though we start out and we want guys that's on the field to win, a lot of times the players that make the most difference for the other players on the field are the ones that probably will never play a down, but that camaraderie will lead them to be CEOs, great family men. So, you know, it goes back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago, that we're judged by how much we win as coaches. But if you could really measure coaches by their lives, you change through the scholastic approach, being able to take the game and utilize that game for the guy that may never line down on Saturday, but what you do with them all week makes the whole community better.
Okay. Coach Johnson.
Well, I tell you, I think I've always thought of that issue as it all depends on what culture are you trying to develop. If you say you're trying to develop a culture of family and togetherness, then you got to make sure the players know. Obviously, you're trying to win every game you play, and you want good players. But as far as the individuals, it doesn't matter how well you look, your ability is. You're part of this family. You're part of our culture. Yeah. You got to find something about that person, about that young man to highlight. Okay, you may not be able to run the fastest 40 or lift the most weight, but there's something that you have, something that you bring to us that you're on this team. It could be, like Coach has kind of alluded to, your attitude in the locker room, the way you get after on scout team, your selfishness, you know, helping your teammates out. It could be that guy that's helping guys out in the study hall to get them right, help you guys right academically. He's got it. There's got to be something about him. If he's part of your team and you develop the right culture, that there's something about that kid that you can highlight. I mean, if you can't find that, then you got to look at your culture and see what's going on there. Because I just believe that if you get the right culture and the right environment and you're the preaching and selling that family, I don't care if that kid runs a 4.6, 5.40. There's got to be something about him that I could find the highlight to him.
Okay. Coach Bowden.
You know, that exit interview where you have that fifth-year senior come in and he's never played since he's been there and he's not going to play the following year, that is a hard conversation. But like a couple of these coaches have mentioned, there's something you can do. I mean, and I can remember my brother Steve, who played at West Virginia. My brother's older brother Steve was a walk-on. Wasn't very good. And my father, you remember the end zone down there close to the river, those metal end zones, Duck, we played West Virginia?
Right.
My father put him up in the stands to receive the ball when the kickers would go down there and practice and kick balls into the bleachers. So he was in charge of getting that. And then even when I played, do you remember one year in college football, my own father, I tell you, I hope God punishes my father for this up there in heaven, puts him in timeout. Or something, but there's one year in college football when I played that you could take one guy and they could run the play in and they didn't have to stay. He gave the play in the huddle and came back out. I don't know if you remember that, but you know, it used to be when you took a play in, you had to play one play. But they changed it one year where you could take one guy and he could run the play out there and tell it to the quarterback and then he'd have to run off the field and never play. That was me. My father did that to me in front of 36,000 people. I never got in a play. I ran the play out there and gave it to him and ran it in. So there's the point being, there's something you can do. You're not any good. And I think it's the head coach's job to keep that unity and harmony on the team. And you got to utilize those guys. And like I said, I hope God took care of that situation right off the bat when my father walked into heaven. He said, "Hey, Bobby, you go over and stay in the corner until I tell you to come out for what you did to your sons." But you got to find something for them to do.
All right. Before I come to Coach Baker, I want to come back to you, Tim, from a player's viewpoint. When you hear what some of the coaches say, and you know that you have a guy on the team that can't help you as far as a teammate, what's your thoughts and what was your views on that?
I think if you know as a teammate that he has some value to the team, and you know he's not going to get to play, you want to just kind of lift him up, kind of encourage him. Because you like I think Coach Bowden and Coach Johnson mentioned, there's a reason he's on the team. The coaches see some value, whatever it is, in what he's doing. And if you see the guy as a good teammate and, you know, he hasn't been getting played, you just want to lift him up and keep his spirits high.
Okay. All right. Well, Coach, if Coach Bowden's up there listening to us, Coach Bowden, that was strictly Tommy. That was strictly Tommy talking.
Yeah, you liked him. You played.
Yeah, don't bring the rest of us down with him, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That's right.
All right, Bake, your thoughts.
Well, I'm glad you left me last on this one because I'm a kind of bring it up to the modern times because I think it's an interesting question in today's environment of the portal, right? So I guess it depends on what end of the portal you're talking about. Are you talking about when you say a player that you don't think is going to be able to help you, okay, pre-portal, right? So you have those conversations, whether it's through an exit interview or wherever it is, or the guy just coming and saying, hey, coach, what do you think my future is here? All right, then it's kind of up to him, right? So, all right, so if a guy doesn't feel like he's going to be able to contribute, you really aren't saying anything that's going to make him think that, you know, he's going to be able to help you on the field because he may not be that guy. I think the portal is taking care of some of those guys, right? Then I think the guy that the other coaches and Tim were talking about is that guy who decides to stay, right, but who still isn't a guy who's going to necessarily be a big part of your team as far as, you know, the guys that are playing on Saturday afternoons. I think then it goes right back to, and everybody said it in their own way, you know, that guy, if a guy decides to stay in today's environment, today's culture, with the options he has, then he's probably the right kind of guy, right? He's probably a guy that wants to get his degree. He's a guy that, you know, playing for that institution, the institution that he started with, or at least the institution that he made the decision to go to, wherever that is in the process, it's important to him. He loves his teammates, so he wants to be around those guys. He wants to support those guys. You know, he's the guy that's going to be doing things the right way, because really the guys who either want to leave, they can leave, right, because of obviously the rules, and then or the guy who you really don't want to stay around because they're more of a detriment than they are an asset. Those guys, you kind of, there's avenues to motivate those guys to possibly seek, you know, another institution also. So it's really different, Duck, than it was, you know, back, I mean, heck, even 5 years ago, right, before they had the transfer rules the way they are now. Certainly a lot different. Tommy, you know, all of us old dogs are on the field. I mean, on the phone, Don Ely and all of us. Back when we were playing, you know, you suck it up, man. You play, right? You stay at your school and you buckle up, and if you do whatever you got to do to get on the field, because there were no, you know, there was no open door, there was no open window. Well, now every door is open, every window is open, and, you know, you spend as much time talking in today's football, collegiately, you spend as much time talking, well, is this guy going to stay and do we want him to stay, you know, as you do anything else anymore. That's just the reality of it.
Okay.
David, just one more comment about that, listening to all them coaches talk. You know, I felt like if I had a fifth-year senior that didn't play, if I signed him, then I made a mistake, or one of my coaches made a mistake, and he just didn't pan out. We evaluated him correctly. I didn't think I should punish that guy for a mistake that me or my staff made. So you hear a lot now of guys running guys off, and especially a first-year head coach. Guys don't fit into the system, and you run guys off. But, you know, maybe my first year, Tulane first year, Clemson, there's a different philosophy. But I felt like if I signed the guy or me and my assistants made a mistake, then that was my fault. It wasn't the player. So I was not going to do anything to jeopardize a scholarship or try to run him off.
Okay. I want to stay with you, Coach Bake. When do you start recruiting your players, knowing that the portal is going to open again in May, right after spring ball?
Yeah.
I thought he said B. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. That question has been asked quite a bit during this offseason because of the change in the climate and the opportunities young men have now. I think that you've got several different kind of coaches, right? Because we're different people, right? So not everybody coaches the same. Not everybody is the same. I think the coach who is not afraid to coach will be the guy who's going to retain the most guys. So in other words, you gotta create value for that guy. You gotta show that guy that by staying in the program, going through the process, that guy's value is going to be maximized by doing that. All right. I think if you end up, you know, trying to recruit your guy to stay and coach the guy, that's almost a conflict. You're gonna convince the guy to stay by showing that guy that you can help him become a better person, a better football player. You know, help him obviously get his degree at your institution. That's what's going to convince that guy to stay. Because if you do those things and you're proving that you're helping this guy get better, this guy is seeing production, this guy is getting better, he feels more secure in his life, whether it's relationships, son, father, whatever the situation is, but you are creating value for that guy is going to be willing to stay. And if he's not, there's really nothing you can do to change it anyway. So all that time you spend in worrying about, okay, I hope he likes me, right, and trying to be his friend instead of his coach, because the two sometimes can be synonymous, but a lot of times, you know, it's different, right? I mean, that's not what you're there to be. You're there to be respected and to some degree liked, but the respect part, because of what you can do for that young man, in my opinion, even in today's climate, is more important than being liked. And I think that really, as I look at it, I know I'm an old guy, but I look at it, and I don't know where it's going, Duck. That's a great question. I think a lot of younger coaches are really kind of taking that other side of it. Hey, I'm going to be this guy's best buddy, right, and convince him to stay, and maybe even at the expense of telling him some things that he needs to hear, right? Not telling him the things he needs to hear, but telling him the things he wants to hear, right? If you're coaching that guy, you need to tell him the things he needs to hear. And sometimes those things are different.
Okay. And I want to come to Tim before I come to Hill Ely. Tim, it almost seems, and you hear what Coach Baker said, how his approach, but it almost seems like a lot of the coaches, like the young coaches, are more treating them almost like they're recruiting these kids out of high school, you know, bothering up to them, but trying to be their friends. Your thoughts on that?
I never looked at my coach as my friend. I wanted to get instruction from him. I wanted him to be somebody that I had respect for, not only as a man, but his knowledge of the game and the instruction that he could give me to be a better player. So, quite honestly, I was never all that, you know, interested in the coach being my friend. I wanted him to be my coach. Of course, I had some hard angles as coaches as well, too. So maybe that's kind of why I felt that way.
Okay. All right. Coach Hill Ely, same question. You know, recruiting after spring ball, when do you start recruiting your players that are already there?
Well, you never stop recruiting the ones that's here now. The portal opens on April 15th. So you're in a situation where now they have a whole new situation where now anyone from the collective can call your players 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year. So they constantly recruiting your good players. But you have to continue to build relationships with your players, because at some point when all the dollars and stuff get thrown at them and everything gets down, players want to play for good coaches. Yeah, they want to get paid, but they want to play for good coaches, and they want to play for people that care about them. So you never stop recruiting the players that's on your team. Every year these rules are constantly changing. Now they've changed the rule where a player can go from school to school. There's no more one-year residency. So a guy can go to three different schools or four different schools. It's all kinds of stuff that's going on. So you have to recruit the whole family year-round. You know, a lot of times I end up picking out five guys a day, and I'm going to make contact with those five guys and their parent or whoever that is that's making that decision, helping them make that decision, just to say, hey, how you doing? Everything is going good. We just wanted to reach out to you and see how everything was going. And try to constantly stay where it's not just a business situation, but it's a situation where you feel like a part of the family because they hear from you so much.
Okay. Coach Johnson.
You know, it's the way things are set up now, recruiting never ends. It never it used to be once you got your guys, you know, you moved on. But the process never ends now. You're constantly recruiting those guys before spring, during spring, after spring, during the season. You have to. That's just the nature of the game with the portal and all these different things. But I tell you what, I think it was someone said it earlier. I hope that the coaches, young coaches coming up, do understand at the end of the day, you are a coach. And we can't lose sight of that. We can't just go out there trying to be their friends and buddy up with it all. If we're doing that, the game will sacrifice. Now, we got to understand that you still got to be a coach. You can't be afraid to coach. I think one of the best compliments that was ever said to me in all my years by one of my players came to my office one day and said, "Hey, coach, I was just curious. What happened to that guy that poured the melted butter from my lobster tail on my visit? Where'd that guy go?" I said, "That guy ain't here anymore, brother." And I said, "He's gone because I care too much about you, because I want you to be successful." And that dude with the butter, that guy he don't care about you in the long run. He's just trying to help you have a nice steak and lobster dinner. But when he said it to me, I started laughing. And that was probably about 15 years ago when this happened. And it still resonates with me because that was one of the best compliments I've ever had to a player.
Tommy, same question, Tom.
You know, Dave, I think this question, more than any, is one of the reasons that five head coaches left head coaching jobs and took million-dollar pay cuts to get out of the profession, because it's not when do you start, it's when do you stop. You don't stop. It's something that has evolved. It's 24/7, 365 days a year, and I think it's forced good people out. The guy at Boston College, I did not know him. I know he's a defensive guy, background. He's a hard-nosed guy, you know, and they probably wanted – he probably had players, as one of the guests mentioned earlier. They didn't want a coach. They want a best friend. And the defensive guys, a lot of times, you know, a lot of times in defensive coordinators, their wires don't connect all the way up in their head. They're hard-nosed, tough guys, and I'm not your friend, I'm your coach. But they want friends now, and I think that's why we've lost. The guy at South Alabama left. He won 10 games last year, and now he's going to Alabama as a coordinator. Chip Kelly took a $2 million pay cut to go be a coordinator and not handle and not have to deal with this question that you just had right here. So, unfortunately, I think it's affected the profession, but you can't stop recruiting. And unfortunately, as just mentioned, you have to be their friend. They don't want yelled at. They don't want discipline. Some of them don't want coached hard. They want you to be their friend, and that's not how you get ahead in this profession. That's not how you win games in this profession. And I mentioned five guys are head coaches. I do think, and Nick Saban alluded to this, this is, I think, one of the reasons that he got out of it. So unfortunately, you can't stop recruiting them. And I think it's ruined the profession. I think those unprecedented five coaches, head coaches, do what they did. I think this is one of the reasons right here.
Okay.
Don said something earlier that I think is probably more important than the recruiting part is the building relationship part. Like, I see that as different. Like Coach was talking about the guy pouring, you know, when you're recruiting him, you're pouring the butter on his lobster, right? Trying to tell him whatever he's got to do to get there. But when you're, you know, part of coaching is building relationships. So I think, you know, I think you never stop as a coach building a relationship with the kid, kid's family, trying to figure out his whys, do whatever you got to do, because that's essential. You know, I fortunately coached pro ball for over 20 years, and it was the same thing at that level. It was building relationships. I mean, you certainly weren't recruiting those dudes, but you know, you were building relationships. So I guess what I was saying, you know, earlier, and I'm one of those defensive guys, Coach Bowden said a little off, but but you know, so you know, I was I don't want you guys thinking I don't think that building relationships is important. I think that's important. I think that's essential, but I think that's a part of coaching. It's also part of recruiting, yes, but that's part of coaching. And I think building relationships is going to be the thing that's going to help guys stay in the program too, along with obviously trying to help them be better.
Okay. I want to come back to you, Coach Bouton. How do you feel about the NCAA moving, talking about moving, signing day to the end of June, and the last signing day to be the 1st of December, eliminating February? But the other part of that is most of the coaches end up getting jobs in December, January, February. Your thoughts?
Well, that was my point. I took two head coaching jobs at Tulane and Clemson. Both of them were in December. I think Tulane was December the 6th, and Clemson was probably shortly thereafter. And I was able to salvage the recruiting year because it wasn't till December the 1st. February the 1st. I had seven weeks, and was fortunate enough to go in there and sign some good players. If you change that to December the 1st, you've lost. It's going to really, really make it difficult. So I think for coaches, if there wasn't any movement, this is a profession, unfortunately, that involves a lot of movement from coaches from job to job. And I think that would not work good for coaches in that particular position where they take a new job. If there's stability in the program, be honest with you, I don't think it makes much of a difference because, as it's been mentioned, recruiting, one of the things about recruiting is developing relationships. And a lot of times the player, the recruited player, is going to pick the coach that he's got the best relationship with, or, unfortunately, the best relationship that offers the most money, because that's what it's gotten down to. It is about relationships, yeah. But you got a great relationship with two coaches, and one's offering you $500,000, one offering you $700,000. Well, that relationship with the $700,000 looks better than the other. So I don't think if coaches have got some stability in the program, the dates make that much difference, because recruiting now is year-round. The official visits are taken, year-round practically. They're on campus year-round practically. Coaches are having recruiting weekends year-round. So I don't think the dates mean as much as they used to. But stability, if a coach has changed jobs, yes, it's a factor. But if there's not, I don't think moving these dates is going to have much of a bearing on it.
Okay. Coach Yaleely, same question.
Now, are we still on the same question about the relationship in the NIL, Doc?
The signing period to end of June.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that. You know, it's one of those ones where I think, you know, everybody's constantly trying to find a way to lock guys in, to get them out of the verbal commitments, to get commitments early. If you go to the June signing, what does that do for the high school coach that kid got a scholarship and he goes back there? How hard does he play for you? Or does he say, well, you know what, I got my scholarship in hand, let me get a couple games in and I'm going to shut it down on my team. I think, you know, that things have been going on for a long time with February signing, and we keep, you know, trying to readjust it and change the spoke. But the people that we're affecting the most, portal, early signing, is the high school student athlete. You know, we're putting so much pressure on that high school coach. If you end up with three guys or six guys on his team that might have a scholarship, and they've already signed their and made their commitment. Now who tells them to go out and play hard? Do they have to get a call from the coach of the college to say, we need you to play hard this week so we can see you? Or does that guy say, hey, now, shut it down some. We don't need you to come in here injured. You know what I mean? You know, it takes a little guts and a mm-hmm. little savvy, a little bit that want to earn something while you're competing. So, you know, this is, to me, it's just, I hope they don't go to it because I think it will really hurt the high school and the morale of the high school.
Okay, Tim, from a player's viewpoint, signing early, you hear what Coach Hill Ely was talking about, you know, hey, how it might possibly hurt, you know, the high school, not only the player but the coach. You know, you depend on this kid and he shuts it down on you. Your thought?
Well, Doug, quite honestly, on this particular question, I would defer to the coaches. I'm very interested in the viewpoints I've heard so far from Coach Bowden and Coach Ely. I'd rather just listen on this one.
Okay. All right. Then I'll jump to Coach Baker.
Don hit on something when he talked about the possibility of coaches, or at least in the high school coach's mind, the possibility of college coaches telling the guy, hey, you're signed with us now, you know, make sure you take care of yourself this fall. We want to get you healthy. Like, I would love to say that there is no way that that's going to happen. But, man, I've been coaching this for about 40 years, right? I love coaching, and I love coaches. But sometimes we're our own worst enemies. So the problem that the high school coaches have, the fear that Don just talked about, that's real. Like, I would hate that. I would hate the possibility of a college coach signing a kid early, going into a senior year, a kid signed so he knows where he's going to be going to school, okay, and then that guy saying, hey, we want to get you whole, make sure you take care of yourself. Like, that to me is like, I hate to even think that that's a possibility, but my experience is because of the crazy stuff I've seen coaches do to try to protect their own best interests, that's a possibility. Now, having said that, let's eliminate that, say that that's not going to happen, which I agree with Don. I think it's a possibility. Okay, but let's say that's not going to happen. Now it's really, to me, the same as it's been, particularly when you talk about the top kids, right? Because most of those kids are going into their senior year with all kind of offers anyway, right? And as we know as coaches, sometimes those offers are committable, sometimes they aren't. But if you have enough of them, at least one or two of them are. All they can do is go to one school anyway. So my point is, those guys are going into their senior year feeling like they're going to have a scholarship anyway. So whether they put their name on the paper in June, or whether they, you know, are waiting until December to do it, they're approaching that season knowing they have a scholarship. And if they've committed, because so many of them are committing in the summertime, they're really going into that season thinking, okay, I'm going to Clemson, I'm going to Tulane, I'm going to Georgia Tech, you know, whatever, Mississippi State. I'm going to those schools anyway. You know what I mean? So I think that part of it is not as big a, like, that part doesn't bother me as much, as long as those kids are not being encouraged to shut it down, either through the college coach that they signed with, which, again, that would just be terrible to me, or through some other resource or person influencing that kid to shut it down. Because they haven't shut it down to this point. You know, you see some kids that they play lazy their senior year because they feel like they've already made it. You're going to have that anyway. You have it now, right? I mean, I've seen it, right? So what the coaches are worrying about, they have that now even without signing. But at least the signing, as long as the college coaches don't do that you know, unthinkable thing that we just talked about, at least the signing, it takes that stress off the kid going into his senior year. So I think it does have some value.
Okay. Coach Johnson.
Well, you know, I see both sides of it, and I get it. But to be 100% honest, I don't understand why we keep destroying this game and messing with all these different things. From a coaching standpoint, a college coaching standpoint, like I think it was Coach Bowden said before, it doesn't matter anymore when the signing date is, because recruiting is never ending. There is no off season anymore. There is no downtime from recruiting.
If you're going to be a college football coach now or any sport, there is no downtime for you. That's just part of the deal. You know, maybe that's why the salaries keep going up and up. But, you know, I just don't see it there. But I'll say this, from a high school coach's standpoint, as we're talking about that topic, the NCAA in the last few years has not done one thing to help those people out. All we've done is hurt the high school game, the high school coaches, the high school players, the portal, all that stuff is killing those guys. And we're not doing anything to help. We talk about building the sport. Here we are. We're cutting the legs out at the grassroots again. And like you said, but yeah, there is kids already. It's already happening where some kids do turn it off. But it's going to be even worse. And if we don't think that we'll fool ourselves. I mean, I hear kids talking about it now around my sons, their friends. If I had a scholarship already signed and locked in, this and that. I mean, come on, man. It's already happened. We know. Like Coach said, we don't want to think this way, and we're all here. We all love this game. We all love coaches, and I hope no one's doing that, but we know someone is telling these kids, once you sign for me, you need to save a little bit. We need to make sure that you're locked in, that you're healthy, because we need you to play for us when you get here as a freshman, some of these guys. It's going to happen, but I don't get it. The February signing day has worked for so long. I don't understand why do we need to change it? Why do you have to lose your life just to coach football? I just don't get it. Because these coaches don't have a life. There is no time for it.
Okay. But Never Hit It So Good Radio, Francis Cooper, Tim Moore, Ryan Baker.
Doug,
go ahead.
Doug, I just wanted to add, too, that the NCAA – only puts policies in place that coaches vote on. So, you know, maybe, you know, a lot of things hide behind those letters, NCAA. It's not a rule put in place that the coaches and the coaching committee hadn't brought forth and had a unanimous decision or a passing vote to turn suggestions into policies. So, you know, we say it's NCAA, but there's a lot of us that sit around the table that say, oh, well, I want to be able to get on the road and recruit longer. But who you recruiting? I mean, you know, if you're going to change all these rules that the ones you're going to watch can't get in, what are you doing that for?
Okay. Coach Hill Ely, Coach Johnson, Coach Bowden, Coach Baker, hey, appreciate you guys coming on. See you next month. Thank you.
Enjoy it. Thank
always
you.
A pleasure.
Okay,
always
enjoy
a pleasure.
It, guys. Good talking.
All right.